We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. Listeners, this episode is an Adult Improver special of sorts, as we will discuss momentarily. But first, as always, wanted to give a shout out to our presenting chess education sponsors, Chessable.com. If you have not heard the news, Jeremy Silman, may he rest in peace, is now... His courses are being rolled out on Chessable. Silman's endgame course is available on Chessable. And coming imminently, possibly by the time this comes out, is Grandmaster Maurice Ashley presenting the classic book, How to Reassess Your Chess. I, of course, did a podcast about it some years ago, and have some more content related to Jeremy Silman on the way. But it's an absolute classic book, and it is overdue to get to Chessable. So we're excited for that. We also have courses from a recent guest, H1 Chess, friend of the pod, FM James Canty. I am Christoph Selecki, is coming out with a black repertoire for beginners. His work is always excellent. I am Andres Toth, has something coming soon. So you guys know the drill. Just be sure to go to Chessable, take a look around, see what's new, see what piques your interest. As for this episode, it's one I'm super excited for. Our guest is trying something innovative in the chess, I guess you could call it improvement and content creation space. So he is a 32-year-old who wasn't enjoying his professional career and has decided to take a year off and pursue chess and chronicle the journey. So I am really excited. I feel like this is like a fantasy for a lot of chess enthusiasts, myself included. I wouldn't mind going to like a desert island somewhere and really working on my game, although I guess a desert island wouldn't be the best place because I need people to play, but you get the idea. Anyway, really excited to chronicle this story and dig more into it. So let's welcome our guest, Benjamin Hotchkiss. Welcome, Ben. How are you?
Hey, Ben. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on as well. I think you need a Wi-Fi connection. Yeah. Then you're good to go then.
Yeah. Well, I think even like I was thinking like Hawaii would do the trick. I just don't know if there's enough OTB because as I'm sure we'll be digging into, I do consider that a crucial component if you're depending absolutely. On to what extent chess improvement is the true goal. But Ben, let's begin with the genesis of this project. So for context, Ben wrote about the idea on Reddit, and we're recording this on December 1st, 2023. This will likely be out about 10 days later from when we're recording. So Ben may have a few new content pieces pumped out by then, but the basic idea is you can go to his YouTube channel, catch up on what he's done so far, as well as see what happens in the future from when we're recording. But anyway, Ben wrote a Reddit post detailing this quest, and now he's doing it. So Ben, how did this idea come about?
Yeah, so it's been a long time coming in that I have been, for about 10 years, probably, about 10, 11 years, trying to find a job which I like so much that in any one day, if I can actually get excited about going to work or feel like I'd rather do that than like have a snow day or a day off, then that's like my metric I'm in a position where I'm actually enjoying my job enough. And I went on a journey of different careers, just jumping into them for a little bit until I realized, okay, this is good in this way, not so good in another way. So I was a maths teacher for 3 years. Then I went into, I worked for my dad for a couple of years, helping his small business, like as a little sort of mini consultant. And then I joined EY and was a management consultant there. And transitioned into being a product manager, like building tech products, and then went to work for a small company, specifically about making an app. And then ended up working for a tiny little, sort of kept on working for smaller and smaller companies, enjoying the freedom and control you got from jumping into smaller and smaller companies. And then finally ended up at a tiny company with about 10 people. And all throughout that time, I was like waiting for that thing, and I never found it. And so, in the periphery, I had the idea of making a YouTube channel for a number of years, and never really found the thing that I would actually focus on. And then, just in the last few months, I thought of this idea: like, how good can you get at a thing if you like properly commit to it without a job at the same time? So you can, rather than putting in, if you're really working in your evenings, rather than putting in sort of 10, 15, 20 hours a week, you could more put in 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And yeah, I just thought, okay, I can save up enough money to make it through a year frugally. And so I did that. And then I thought, I'm very prone to jumping into things, maybe without enough consideration, but like definitely quicker than I know is common. Like I've got lots of friends who are maybe not slow to do it, but they'd be like, they take into consideration for a number of months, a number of years, maybe, okay, I think I'm going to move on to another job. And then when they do it, they're always very happy to, they're always very happy that they did it when they, as quickly as they did it. And so I was quite happy just to jump in as soon as I could.
Yeah, I could sense sort of that strain of thought in some of the Reddit comments. A lot of them were sort of like, well, what if it doesn't work out, you know? And I like this is a year of your life. It might work, it might not, but you know, if you're in a situation where you can do it, I don't feel like there's going to be like toxic harm done if you end up looking for a job in a year. That was just my perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've never been too concerned about having gaps in my CV. I think that's quite an old piece of advice. Like, I've been in a situation where I've been hiring people, and I've never gone, you had 6 months where you weren't doing something productive towards your career. Like, what? Tell me about this. Explain yourself. And if you have a reasonable explanation, like I took a year off to try and pursue something I was really interested in, I feel like people are going to be quite agreeable.
Yeah, I agree. And also like in the modern sort of competitive or professional setting, like you'll have the content that you create to point to. It might work, it might not, but people will see that you weren't doing nothing the whole time. And there are certainly a strain of people hiring who would admire that sort of like, independent go-getter sort of mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, certainly the goal is to never have to have that question, to never answer to an interviewer in that context again. So yeah, I'm 100% with the goal of make a successful enough YouTube channel, make something which is entertaining enough and provides enough value that people are like, okay, yeah, this is worth enough of my time that I can just live off. I'm not going to go full Levy Rosman, become the top chess YouTuber in the world. But I think if I can make something which, speaks to enough people, then I can keep the, in the business parlance, increase my runway. I can then maybe go do another year and then see how that goes.
And Ben, so I understand that you have a lot of content goals, as you were just discussing, and we will return to those in a minute. But I also noticed you get a lot of questions about like chess-related goals. Now, for context, I think you had mentioned to me that you're about 1400chess.com rapid. Do you have any chess rating achievement goals over the course of this year, or are you trying to steer away from that?
I have, but it's not my main goal. I think the rating goal I'd like to achieve is chess.com rapid 2200, which I think a lot of your listeners will probably balk at, but I think it's achievable given how many hours I'm going to be putting into it and how like lacking in distractions I'll be. But it's still a lofty goal. My main goals aren't rating related.
Okay. Yeah, I would describe that as extremely lofty, I have to say. But just to set the stage before we maybe debate the loftiness of that goal or exchange opinions, could you describe your chess history briefly?
Yeah, of course. So learned to play as a child, but never really went any further than sort of playing a few games with adults who taught me how to play who taught me the rules. And then when I was teaching in like 2013, 2014, I was living with a couple of my friends who were playing chess with each other over the board and weren't in any sort of, hadn't had any real history of chess themselves. We were just like learning as they played. And they kept on asking me, hey, Ben, like come and have a game. I want to see, we want to see what you can do. And I refused every time. I was adamant I didn't want to play that first game because I was really busy being a teacher and like learning how to do that and working in evenings and really didn't have a time for a new hobby. And I knew I'd lose. I knew they'd like crush me and that I'd want to learn how to get better and beat them back. And I just knew I didn't have the time to do that. So I took, I just took a hard stance, didn't play a single game with them. And then when I left teaching and went to work with my dad, I was like the fire was there. I was like, oh, okay, I'd like to learn how to play this properly. So I started playing online then, started watching YouTube videos. It was all like St. Louis Chess Club, Eric Rosen, Ben Feingold, all the lectures on there.
So we're and then talking circa 2018 or something.
This is like 2015.
Okay.
So yeah. So like,
probably not Eric Rosen yet, but go on.
Really not. Okay. Yeah. But like 2015, 2016, maybe I'm just mixing up memories of those things. But then yeah, Chess Network was the main YouTube channel. So his beginner to master, series. I don't know at what point where he was in that, but yeah, I started watching that and, he's not made one of those for a number of years, I don't think now, but yeah, that I watched all of those, some of them really long form, like introduced some of the basic concepts like good bishops, bad bishops, pawns, when to take doubled pawns, like some very, very basic stuff, which I'd just never come across before. But then quickly devolved into just playing bullet. So started at rapid, started playing a couple of blitz games, seeing, finding the adrenaline from that, and then ending up playing two plus one, and then sadly going all the way down to 1+0, and just spent like, I probably played over 30,000 games of 1+0 over like 5 years.
Wow.
But it's just ridiculous because I didn't get very good at chess, like actual chess. Right. I got reasonably good at moving quickly and not blundering but like making one or two move threats. And I was sort of tempted into it because I was, taking breaks from work and thinking I don't have time for a full 15-10 game, but I have time for 2 or 3 1+0 games. And then sometimes obviously then you get addicted and play, for 2 hours and realize you need to get back to your job.
Yeah. Well, to the extent you're trying to improve in this coming year, I hope you don't have too much bullet
yeah, exactly.
Blocked off on your calendar.
No, I don't. I played one for one session for a video recently, just as some downtime. But yeah, no, I'm certainly going to avoid, put all the effort into avoiding getting sucked into doing blitz or bullet. Although from your book, potentially some blitz for opening practice. The idea of doing like 9 games a day and reviewing every single one. I really like that idea. But really sticking to 9, cannot go more than 9. Oh yeah, yeah. I've read your book. It's very good. Yeah. I've got some questions actually at some point. Yeah. I know this is more an interview of me, but I'd like to speak to you about your book. That'd be good.
Sure. Yeah, we can save those for the end. But yeah, the concept that I talk about of bright lines, I think, you know, you're right at the level where I kind of say blitz can start to be do more good than harm. But I think because you have such an ambitious agenda over, you know, mapped out over the next year, it certainly makes sense for you to incorporate some blitz. And also, like, as we'll talk about momentarily, you need some fun, you know, like it can't just be all grinding or else, like, A, what's the point? And B, like, you've got to, you know, map it out in a way where it's sustainable. And I might as well just dive in to the 2 Patreon mailbag questions because they both sort of hit on this theme immediately. So like I said, I mean, I'm jealous in a sense of what you're doing, and I think a lot of other people will be as well. And so I'm going to read back to back the questions from Kai Liss and Matt Plays Chess. Thanks to both of you for helping to support Perpetual Chess. So Kai asks, he says, I'm wondering if you really don't have any goals at all, other than, quote, I just want to learn how to play the game better and enjoy my life more, unquote. Please don't misunderstand me. I think the approach is great. For me personally, I only see the difficulty in maintaining motivation when I don't have any goals to follow, like rating points or norms. So how do you try to maintain motivation over such a long period of time? In any case, good luck and above all, have fun. I'm sure many chess aficionados are very jealous. So that's the first question. Second one is from Matt Plays Chess. 1, a year off sounds great, but impractical for me. Do you think taking a week or a month dedicated to chess would be beneficial to adult improvers? So we'll come back to that one. And 2, how are you thinking about burnout? I love the idea of spending a year on chess, but I worry it would become like a job and I would lose motivation. So especially let's start with that sort of theme of burnout and losing motivation, since both Kai and Matt Plays Chess hit on it.
Yeah. Okay. So shall I talk? I'll talk a little bit about motivation. So and then I'll talk about burnout, I think. So with motivation, for me personally, I think most people are very hardworking when they find the right thing to do. And I can work very long hours, very intensely, work through like physical pain, work through like, you know, psychological pain, like this is boring or this is difficult. If I'm quite motivated by the thing I'm doing. And I think the reason why I've struggled with like standard jobby jobs is like I've never been motivated intrinsically, like fundamentally. So I've always been fighting myself. I'm always like, okay, I'm going to try and put the hours in. I'm going to try and research this or like really get good at this, because maybe if I get good at the thing, then it'll provide me with some intrinsic motivation. And because that's never happened, I've just spent the last 10 or 11 years feeling like I'm always fighting myself. Whereas with chess, I actually want to play it. I actually want to get better at it. And so the hard work, for the first time, I'm like waking up in the morning and thinking, oh, okay, so I'm going to start with doing these puzzles. And then I get to do this or I get to do that, which is very exciting to me. So I think the concept of it turning into a job, that is something which there is a danger of that. But it's very different for me personally, because all other jobs have been tainted by that thing, which is like a lack of fundamental motivation. That's probably the best way of explaining it.
We have some loose ends to return to from the Patreon questions, but let me pick up on 2 things from what you just said. Number 1, just want to say, from watching your videos, your enthusiasm for chess really comes across. So that rings true to me. I can see you're just really having a lot of fun playing, and you know, you're still early enough in your journey where I think you can, as I write about in my book, like you can still learn quickly, especially with the number of hours you're putting in. So I do think it could be exciting in that sense. But on the other hand, I did see, and I don't know to what extent this is like your content versus your chess, but having watched your YouTube videos up to the point we're recording here on December 1st, like there was a point where you said you were taking the day off from chess. And I was curious if that was based on life circumstances or if you were already feeling like this is becoming a grind.
Oh, yeah. No, it was that particular circumstance was I had the weekend. So I'm typically going to try and take Saturday afternoon off and then all of Sunday off. So I had planned to do that. And then on like Thursday or something quite late, I decided to join my first ever tournament. And so my first ever over the board tournament, which was 5 classical games in 2 days on Saturday and Sunday. So I was pretty tired by the time I started the tournament. And then I had the experience, which I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this have had, which is their first ever over the board tournament. I've never played competitive chess with pieces in my hands, and it just knocked me out completely. So I was already planning to take Monday off, and then I ended up taking Tuesday off as well, playing chess. So yeah, certainly that kicked me. But it wasn't something which I was, it was more like a delayed weekend than I completely wiped out.
Okay. Yeah. And the tournament, also another topic I want to return to, but before we do that, let's get back to the listener questions.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have an opinion on what Matt was asking about taking a week or a month off. I can offer mine as well, but do you think that could be helpful?
Could I just answer the end of the other question, the burnout question, just because I didn't quite hit the burnout just before. So with burnout, from what I've read about burnout, it's a lot to do with rest. So you can work really hard for a really long amount, like in terms of weeks and months rather than like in any one day, any sort of number of hours, but you can work sort of really hard for, you know, 2 months with, you know, very little time off. But if you rest properly in that time off, if every evening you take at least 2 hours or 1 hour or something where you completely switch off, you're not lingering on, you've done a good shutdown process, so you're not really thinking about it anymore, and you do some good stuff like spend time with your family or meditate or whatever you do, exercise. And then you definitely take like at least 24 hours off every week. So taking Sunday off and putting into place the things you need to, so that you're not just thinking about that thing, oh, I'll just quickly check my emails or whatever it is. In my case, it would be going quickly do a puzzle. If you actually rest, then it's much more important to do that. That has an outsized impact on the likelihood of burnout. So I'm sort of resting on that, and I can test if it doesn't work, then I'll find out and I'll be hit hard. But I'm sort of hoping that if I give myself that time off each week, if each evening and each week, then I'll be in a good place.
Okay. Yeah. I suspect you're right.
And then the taking a week off or taking a month to do, taking a week to do chess or a month to do chess. I just don't think I've seen Michelle Carr on YouTube, very popular YouTuber who does a bunch of stuff like this, where she takes a period of time to try and get good at a thing.
She did that with chess episodes.
Levi Rosman. I just don't think it's enough. She went from not knowing how, you know, just knowing how the pieces moved. So obviously I'd be in a position where I have a bit more understanding than that, but I really don't think a month is enough time. To really make enough of, I think you'd be sort of setting some things out in motion, and then you'd get to the end of the month and it's already here. Okay, I guess I'll go back to doing something else. Like, I don't think you'd see enough change to make it worthwhile as a project.
Yeah. Well, my thing is if you're just trying to measure it after a month, reading is a lagging indicator. I don't think that it would be helpful in that regard, but. Yeah. If you maintain some chess work after that, I don't think those hours just like disappear, you know, into the ether. It's more just if you're able to take that time and build a foundation and then continue forward, I think it's great. But if you just took a month off, studied chess, and then did zero chess for 6 months, you probably should have spent that month doing something else, like go to Bali or something, because it's not, the benefits aren't going to be there that much. I mean, obviously I talk in my book about the importance of daily practice. So it doesn't have to be a ton when you get back to regular life, but you want to keep it in your consciousness.
I totally agree. I don't think that it would be a waste of time if you went back to it, but just for my particular circumstance, like I'm not doing this with like a sort of an idea of it being a recommendation for anyone. It's just like, I just happen to be in a situation where I think this is a good idea for me at the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I've answered that question properly. With your Patreon listener, so they were asking, what would it not be beneficial to do it for a shorter period of time? Do they give a reason why they're thinking for a shorter period of time?
So Matt, I believe, was asking because he was looking at it from his perspective. He was saying, "There's no way I personally would be able to do a year, but I can imagine being able to do a week or a month." So I think he was just brainstorming about whether that could be helpful for him. So I think that we answered that question, that basically as long as he could sticks with it, I do think it could be of some benefit.
100%. And it's I think it would be a great thing. It's much less disruptive as well, because if your plan isn't to like leave your job, you can easily take a month off, and well, maybe not easily, but you can probably grab some time, like bring over some time from last year and take 4 weeks off without having too much disruption to your year.
Yeah, I think, and then different jobs have different flex time built in. If you're, a professor or a school teacher, you can potentially get months off. So it doesn't sound like that's what Matt's background is, but Pontus Carlson.
Oh, go on. Sorry. You were going to say something about Pontus Carlson.
Oh, sorry. Just was going to quickly say, in one of my early interviews with Grandmaster Pontus Carlson, he was saying being a teacher is a great job for a chess enthusiast because you have the summers off built in. But anyway, go ahead.
Fantastic. Me and my cousin actually cycled across the States in 2011 when I had I was at university. So it was like a summer holiday of university. It was like 3 months long. And my cousin, who was working in a full-time job, he actually asked for, we took like a month and a half to do it. So he asked for 6 weeks off his job. They said no. He quit. And then when he came back, they gave him his job back. Depending on how valuable you are to that company, they might even just, you can usually get away with quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, call their bluff. After the break, we will discuss whether working full-time subtracts 200 points from your rating. And if not 200 points, how many points? We'll be right back.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Never. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. Okay. I want to read another. So we got a story from a friend of the pod, Patreon supporter Tim Brennan, who's the author of the excellent Tactics Primers, Tactics Time and Tactics Time 2. And Tim actually shared a bit about his background, which I didn't know. So this isn't really a question, but I'm going to read Tim's story. And I'm guessing you'll be encouraged by what he had to say. So Tim writes, "I think this is a very interesting experiment. I was in a similar situation years ago. I got laid off from my longtime job of 15 years and had plenty of savings and severance. So I spent a few weeks being a chess bum, quote, before going back to work. My rating instantly shot up 200 points and I was able to cross over 2000 USCF for the first time. I was about 38 years old at the time. One person asked me, quote, how did you gain so many rating points so fast? And I said, I don't have a job right now. I think people vastly underestimate how much having a full-time job can affect your rating because it's normal to do that. It is like a fish not knowing he's in water. Many times the people you play at the club are also in chess bum mode and either do not have jobs or are underemployed, retired, kids, etc. My personal theory is that going from a full-time job to not working is worth about 200 rating points just by itself. Once I went back to work, my rating went back to my new 1800 floor. When not working, it wasn't just that I had more time for chess, but also time to go to the gym, no stress, plenty of sleep, etc. It probably also depends on the type of work you do. I'm a software engineer, so my job was very mentally taxing. No specific questions, but he's wondering if you have any thoughts on his 200 points theory.
That's really interesting that you went back down to his baseline, though.
I'd love to see
that rating graph and see if there were like differences in peaks, because obviously like you can easily go up and down to, by, you know, 100, 200, but the average is higher. But yeah, I'd love to see that his rating graph and why it went back down. I don't think that, given my experience so far, I've not shot up. But I think it has, I can already feel, like you said, it's a lagging indicator rating. So I can already feel a few improvements that I'm making, because I feel like it's partly because I'm not getting distracted by something else. So I can keep the sort of momentum of, okay, I'm learning this, I'm blundering a little bit less, or I'm being less passive, because yesterday I played a game where I was passive. I moved my bishop to e2 to try and block a check when I could have just moved my king out of the way, and I don't need to castle. So why am I being so passive? And that kind of thing, the momentum of learning those lessons and then being able to apply them the next day rather than like in a few days, I think has made a big difference. But yeah, no 200 point rating improvement for me.
Yeah. So my first reaction is 200 points seems like it's probably on the outer edge of doable. Although also Tim was starting from a fairly high perspective. Yeah. Can you see my screen now, Ben?
Yes, I can. Oh, we can actually see the graph. Fantastic.
So for people on YouTube, I did call up Tim's rating graph and his story checks out. I mean, you can see, and I'll link to this for those of you listening on audio, but preceding 2014, he has this massive jump up and then he just kind of falls back down and squiggles. I mean, it does sound like Tim maybe has an unusually challenging job. So that might factor into it as well. But
there's a second peak there as well.
Points, I wouldn't. Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't guarantee 200 points.
No.
Go on.
If you could, that'd be amazing. I just like the idea of that he went a peak like immediately and then just came down in like four steps, and then he hit like half that size, like again from the baseline of like I think it was 1800. He then goes to maybe 1900, but which he'd never hit before. So I think the drop was probably. His new baseline, but wasn't necessarily like representative of his skill level. I think he definitely improved overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to say once circumstances do get back in the way. But I also appreciate Tim's point about like one can take for granted that other people are living his words, chess bum lifestyle, like kids, for example. Like when I was a kid and playing a lot, I was so immersed in chess, you know, even though I was in school every day, you're daydreaming half the time. And then you have so much time to do other stuff. So, and obviously a lot of people in their 20s, and as Tim said, and retirees find a way to devote a lot of time. But when you're in the sort of middle stages, it can be more challenging and can be something that is underestimated. But Ben, let's hear more about your tournament, because I mean, that's just such a momentous, that's such a big milestone, and you know, how you perceive that and what you learn from that is going to frame so much of like how the next year goes. So what are your early impressions of your first OTP tournament?
I loved it. I thought it was an amazing experience. I lost the first four games and then won the last game, and I got to the end of the first day, so I'd lost all the first three games, and I had I was surprisingly okay with having lost all three games. I definitely posted about it that sort of growth mindset, the idea that the point of this whole project is to learn, really helped me not feel like terribly disappointed, because it didn't really matter if I won or lost, because either way, I'm going to get as much, like a hell of a lot of learning experience from the games. I didn't play particularly well. So that was a bit of a disappointment after the looking back on the whole thing. But having looked at the games, it did highlight or re-emphasize the things which I knew I wasn't particularly good at, or the things which are my biggest weaknesses, are the things that are holding me back. So I'm inclined to play passively in an attempt to sort of, you know, avoid all the issues that are, all the threats that are coming at me, rather than sort of counterattacking and providing, creating a mess for my opponent, which I did in the last game. So the last game was an absolute chaotic mess. I made a blunt. I sacrificed a bishop for two, like the G and H pawns, thinking I could just like run my pawns up and cause havoc at some point in the game. But then I missed a threat on my king, which ended up me losing, going down an exchange. And then I just continued to make an absolute mess of the position and ended up winning. Because I think my opponent was just like, there's so much happening, I don't know how to deal with all of this. And they ended up making a few imprecise slow moves, which eventually capitalized on. But I tell you what, over the board chess is way more taxing, like way more mentally exhausting than I gave it credit for. And I know it's known for that, but I thought I've got a history of doing like endurance sports, and I'm reasonably fit. And I was like, okay, I can do this. This is fine. Like I'll be able to outlast these people who, I'll be able to be concentrating in that third game on the first day. And I really wasn't. Like it was the combination of playing for, you know, 80 minute plus 10 second games in a day, but also the fact that I was playing over the board and I wasn't used to seeing the pieces. So like certain things where at one point my opponent put me at a pin, and then I ended up walking my king round, thinking I could just get out of this situation, and then they took a piece. I thought, oh yeah, of course that piece is hanging. I didn't right. See it. I didn't notice it. But like now that he's taken the piece, like, of course that, okay, that's the end of the game. That's me over. And I just felt like I am now playing at a rating like hundreds of points below my, what should be my ability. So that was an interesting thing to note, and something I'll definitely learn from.
Yeah. So how do you use that information going forward?
Well, for over the board tournaments specifically, it's going to be make sure I have enough rest beforehand, because of the circumstance, I didn't realize I was going to be playing it until a couple of days before, but maybe take a day or two off and do loads of exercise, or like relax and get loads of sleep. And then just train over the board more. So I'm already reading books with a real chess set, and I think playing slower games by replicating. So I'm going to start playing every so often classical games online. But then, because we've got enough time, just setting up a real set and playing the game, and only looking at that game with my board.
Okay. Yeah, those sound like good prescriptions. And Ben, what is the local chess scene like? Where do you live, and what's the local chess scene like there?
Yeah, I live in the Midlands now, so I've just moved recently. And I was living in London previously, and living in London without a job doesn't really work. So right. I'm now living in exactly. Yeah, and it has a great chess scene.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, double-edged sword.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, living in the Midlands, joined a local chess club, and yeah, it's good. I mean, I've got a tournament on the 4th, or just a very small tournament on Monday. And yeah, there seems to be a fair number of chess events that I can drive to. And yeah, it's not as easy as London, where you could just hop on the tube. But yeah, definitely lots of opportunities to play, which is...
So do you think you'll be able to meet as I write about, the John Donaldson prescribed 60 games in this year? Do you think you'll be able to get there?
Yeah. 60 I think so.
Rated?
Yeah, okay, I do think
that's
so.
That's great.
And also, like, I know it's your fourth tenet to do tournament games, because you're making I think part of the extra reason why they're better than like a slow online game is because of how seriously you take it.
Yeah.
Which is certainly true. I found that in the tournament, my concentration was basically 100%. Like I wasn't sort of, obviously you can't check your phone. I wasn't really thinking about anything else but the game that was being played. Whereas you can in online games get a bit distracted. But because I'm part of the chess dojo, I'm playing more slow, very like proper classical online games. And because it's, we organize those games. So you find a training partner or find a person who wants to play a game with you. You pick a time and you know, okay, on tomorrow at 10 a.m., I'm going to play this game with this person. It's a bit different than just getting on Lee Chess or chess.com and clicking new game. So I think that doing that regularly as well makes a big difference. Setting out my store.
I agree. Yeah. And I felt bad for you in reading the Reddit thread, like the, you know, reams of unsolicited advice you were getting in terms of like, A, the sort of lifestyle stuff we talked about, but also like what to study. And obviously, I, of course, have my own opinions, but nonetheless, I was heartened when you said, you know what, I'm just going to join the chess dojo and do what they say. How's that going so far?
Yeah, really well. I was part of it. I've been part of it for a little while, but when I was previously on there with a job, I just found it so difficult. Like I was unable to commit to regular practice. I started playing a weekly classical game on and I'd pick a weekend days to do that, but I just struggled to do it. I would end up with commitments and I sort of had to drop out of those things. So yeah, I love the chess dojo. It has the community. It has a proper strong community of people who are genuinely there to help you. And one of the tenets is that you're meant to help people above you or get help from people above you and advice and game analysis, but also look to people below you below and above is all rating. And so you do get a lot of help from people who are just much, much better at chess than you are, which is an incredible, incredible benefit.
Yeah. And of course they have targeted study recommendations for different rating levels. Are you going to follow those or do you have sort of your own plans?
No. I have a bit of both. Like I have the books that's relevant to my rating band. I'm reading that. And I'm also doing other things that are sort of slightly outside of their prescription. Like for example, tactics, I'm using CTR 4.0, which is like an app that's based on a tactics book and has some nice features that you don't get in other puzzle or in some other puzzle apps. That's not part of the dojo. Like that's not part of the prescription I've got, but it is like, okay, they're fair enough. You want to be doing, I've got enough time to be doing quite a lot of tactics per day. So, you know, rather than just reading Winning Chess Tactics by Yasser Sarawan and doing Puzzle Storm, I'm also going to do this extra work on top of that as well.
That's great. And how structured are your days in terms of your studying? Are you going to do like 2 hours of calculation every morning and then like play a game in the afternoon? Or are you just kind of like wake up and figure out what chess thing to do each day?
Mm. Yeah, at the moment it's very structured, but, and I was sort of criticized for that as well. Like that people looked at that and thought, this is ridiculous. You know, you're going to burn out immediately because you've just got this, you're going to be disappointed if you don't hit that thing by the minute. But my experience of setting schedules is like set them, have them really looking like they're very rigorous or very, very structured to the minute, but then don't worry if you don't do it. So I've got, you know, each minute mapped out as to what I'm aiming to do. But then if someone says, hey, do you have like an hour to just do some puzzles now? Then I'm very happy to throw the structure out the window and say, yeah, of course, let's do that. That's how I'm making it so it doesn't stress me out.
Okay. And from a lifestyle perspective, Ben, I know you said you've got some savings, but like, are you on like a shoestring budget? Like, do you have to count every penny in order to like,
I am. Yeah. And I'm quite happy to do that. Like I'm from the north of England and we're known for being stingy and frugal. And so it's in my nature to be counting the pennies. I am pretty like, pretty much like okay, I've got enough for a year. And then if I can monetize the YouTube channel and then like start earning like a few pounds for each video, then it will ease that. But yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy to do that. I think it's like, I've always been happy to, live frugally and well below my means. But in this case, it's exactly at my means.
Okay. And I hope you don't mind my asking, but do you have like a significant other or like, what does your family think of this plan?
Yeah, I have a significant other and she's very supportive. And my family are quite used to me doing this kind of thing. So they're like, yep, yeah, sounds like you. Good luck. We wish you all the best. And they're very, very supportive.
Excellent. That's good to hear. After the break, we will discuss the best way for Ben to share his full-time chess job on his YouTube channel. And after that, Ben starts asking me questions about my book. We'll be right back.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. All right, let's brainstorm your content a little more because I sense that you've been still trying to wrap your head around exactly how to present it. It sounded like from our brief conversation before we hit record, you're sort of coalescing around a strategy. Maybe it will have changed, maybe not by the time this comes out. But what's your content strategy as of December 1st?
Yeah, so it is to make regular enough content. I hate the word content. I end up saying it because it's just in the vernacular. But make regular enough videos that I'm able to like show people what I'm actually up to frequently. And I think I've been playing around with like what that should look like. There's a guy on YouTube called Sam Sulek. He's a 20 something year old bodybuilder, just an amateur bodybuilder. He started making videos on YouTube and they were just quite long, sort of 40, between 30 minutes and 60 minutes. He would drive to the gym and talk on the way, which is where I got the idea of just talking in my car on the way back from the swimming in the reservoir. Okay, so like completely just took that idea of him. And then people got to know him, really liked how sort of how he was. He just seemed like a nice guy. And he was quite just matter of fact. And he wasn't trying to make sort of ridiculous thumbnails. He wasn't trying to make content which was like very punchy. He was just a guy talking about what he was up to and then showing his work at the gym. He's become very popular and it's been in the YouTube creation world, it's been like, oh, actually maybe YouTube of old is coming back, like 2012 YouTube, where people weren't concerned about making nice thumbnails and they were very just genuinely presenting their lives on camera. So I liked the idea of doing that initially and I've played around with that a little bit. Tried to make a few punchier videos, like very, they're like still like 10, 20 minutes long. And then at the moment, I'm most likely to go into making live stream the regular stuff. So I'll live stream every day on YouTube. And then I'll maybe make a video like once or twice a week with something more specific to say. But given that I'm sort of trying to spend 8 hours a day playing chess, for me to then think of like what's worth presenting as a YouTube video, doing it, recording it, and then editing it, which I'm not an expert editor, it takes me ages. That's not something I want to add to my workload or like split my focus. So I'm like a video creator and a chess improver. I'd rather just click on the camera, be a streamer, which I know isn't no work, but it's, I think, less work. Less work than what I'm currently doing, given my editing skills. And then, yeah, that should tick both boxes, providing enough regular video content for people and to show what I'm actually up to, but also reduce my workload, my editing workload.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can only give my perspective. And as I write in my book, I'm not someone who's sitting around watching YouTube a lot. So my perspective is maybe not the best one to give. But I will say, like, I'm interested in the story, you know, like it. I'm genuinely interested in the story, but I'm less interested in the nuts and bolts. Like, So I don't know if that's true for other people, but like in terms of like watching you solve puzzles and stuff, like, my personal perspective is that's not as compelling as just like a daily or frequent check-in with like, these are the four things I did today. You know, this is how it went. You know, this is how my tournament went. I feel like this is going well, or I feel like this is going terribly. You know, This was a terrible mistake. I shouldn't have done this. But I'm interested in sort of the emotional ups and downs and the challenges, the unforeseen challenges, but sort of like the big picture stuff that you would like tell your girlfriend if she was out of town and you talked to her. You wouldn't go through the checkmate in four puzzle with her. You would just say, like, man, this is
brutal.
You
don't know what
I'd
do with my girlfriend, Ben. I'd go through the checkmate in four puzzle with her. She barely knows how to play the game, but I'd show her that mate in four immediately.
Right. No, I don't mean to be like gender biased in any way. It could, you know, the shoe could be on the other foot just as easily. But anyway, that's just my perspective.
No, I think it's a really good point. I was planning to keep the, like, go back to doing the driving shots, because I think they are something which provides that insight. It's unstructured. It's just me. It's just literally just me driving back from going for a swim. So it's not like a well structured, like, this video has a real purpose and it's about this thing. It is just like a daily update of how I'm doing. I really appreciate that point. And I think it'll be interesting to see, like, who is interested in, or is anyone interested in the nuts and bolts versus the story overall. So yeah, that's a,
yeah. I mean, I think, that, and like, I think I like people might, I mean, yeah. And people knowing the dojo cohort might know some of the stuff you're like, they might already know some of the stuff you're studying, but I do think people will be interested in what you're studying. It's just, I don't think my best guess is people wouldn't necessarily be so interested in watching you study as opposed to like keeping up with the story and seeing how it's going. But anyway, sorry, because I'm sure you're getting flooded with unsolicited advice.
It's not. Luckily, in this case, like, the Reddit post was literally me asking for people's advice on training. It was less about like, yeah, should I do it or should I not, which people jumped on. But yeah, I'm certainly interested in, right. Like, yeah, exactly. I'm certainly interested in the advice on training and also the advice on content creation, because I have no idea. Like, I know what I like to watch on YouTube, but I know that, like, I'm not necessarily the target demographic for the stuff I'm making as well. Like, so it's hard to know.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like I said, because it's so many chess players' fantasy, like, the most compelling thing is to really give them a sense of what it's actually like to do it, you know? But it'll be fun to follow. I'm definitely looking forward to it. And yeah, I would say lean into the OTB stuff. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of poker vlogs of like people just chronicling their day at the casino, you know, like, and as like people like John Bartholomew have talked about, even with top players, there isn't as much coverage. But I think even with amateurs, just the sort of the ups and downs of a given tournament can be quite relatable. Like, even just 2-minute videos after every game, like, oh, I'm crushed. I can't believe I hung my rook at the end there. You know,
yeah, that's a good point.
This 7-year-old just like crushed my spirit, you know? That is very, very relatable.
I've not even played poker before. And I watch Daniel Negreanu's poker vlog sometimes, because he's an entertaining chap.
Yeah. Although he, of course, is lucky in that he does the, you know, drive and talk thing, but he also can just record a bunch of stuff and then send it to an editor.
That makes it ready. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you had some questions about my book, Ben?
Yeah. Well, at least just some stuff to talk about, because I really enjoyed it. I think that even though I'm a listener of your podcast, I still got a lot out of your curation of the episodes and your experience as a chess player as well, sort of like combined. So that was I really enjoyed reading it. So thanks for writing it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There was one point in your chapter about visualization. I just wanted to talk to you about because it seemed like you would talk, like I remember watching David Pruse on the Chess Dojo YouTube channel, I think it was. He does like a big long 2-hour video about how to visualize, and he explained at the beginning he can't visualize, like he can't see. I think he has aphantasia, or he has something where he can't actually like picture anything if he just closes his eyes. Like he can't picture his wife's face, I think he said. So he definitely can't see a board, but he can still do blindfold chess. Like he can do like a blindfold simultaneous four chess game match because he remembers that the bishop is on b2, and then he goes, right. Okay, well if the bishop's on b2 and the pawn on g7 hasn't moved, then the rook and the rook's behind, you know, he sort of maps it out in a rational way, but he doesn't actually see it. And I just wondered if anyone you've spoken to has had that when they talk about visualization, or have you only ever spoken to people who are actually talking about like, okay, then, you know, seeing it in their mind's eye or looking at the ceiling like Hikaru?
Yeah, it hasn't actually come up in those terms on the podcast that often. I've seen some online discussion of like strong players describing what they see, and I have heard other players say they don't really see a chessboard per se. I don't think it's like, I think it might be academically interesting, but I don't think it's practically, I don't think it matters that much. Like it's more, I mean, I do think you're at a level, I mean, as I talk about in the book, where something like the step 2 thinking ahead, I think would be quite beneficial. And some visualization work, like, or the visualized courses on Chessable are both good choices. I think some work on visualization is important, but it's more just do the hard work and whatever you're seeing, air quotes, seeing when you close your eyes, you're seeing, but you'll build the skill however it's appearing, you know, in your head.
Hmm. Yeah, nice. Okay, that's a good point. And I saw your post on Lead Chess, I think it was, where you added the things that you would add to the book if it was published. I think that there was one point about visualization that I don't know if maybe I missed it, but the massive benefit for me and why I'd like to get better at blindfold chess is that I really struggle to read chess books. It's like trying to learn how to read whilst reading a book. It's like very system 2 intentional. Like I'm like, okay, I look at the page, it says bishop d2, and I'm like, if I've set up a piece on my board, then I'm like, okay, bishop d2, okay. And it's like a little bit about coordinates, but it's also like if I had the ability to hold a position in my mind, make a few moves, it would change my reading of books like completely.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I studied Russian in college and lived there, and the experience of trying to read Russian was just like that. It was like a sentence of like pure slog, you know, like just like so much more challenging than just speaking. I mean, hearing that makes me think that it might be worthwhile to spend a lot of time up front doing like the Lee Chess or chess.com like board visualization drills. And again, I can't recommend enough step two thinking ahead. I think for your level in particular, it would be great because a lot of the they break down the questions into small enough pieces where you will get a lot better at naming the squares. I even saw in one of your videos where you were saying, you know, it's like one of those, is it F5 or C4 things, you know? And if you didn't grow up playing chess, it definitely takes work to determine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is one thing. I thought that it was it's something which, well, as I was reading the chapter on the blindfold, as I was reading your blindfold chapter, I was thinking like, oh, maybe I shouldn't focus on it too much. And then I remembered like, I know, but the reason for me is the book reading.
Yeah, being able to read,
Makes total sense. I've got like the book, I've got a book on Mikhail Tal, and I'm like looking forward to reading that. And I know it's not really like just more for enjoyment than directly improving. I think it's a little bit over my head, but I know that I'm a little bit hesitant to start because I know that actually at the moment it would be mostly the sort of administration chore of reading it would sort of be foremost in my mind. But then just to say, like, there's a few things, like, I know that your advice, your four tenets are like quite in line with the Chess Dojo. So it was great to read the detail there. And I like highly recommend anyone who's not got the book to like get it, because it's, even though I already was sold on those four tenets, there was good information in there and sort of pearls of wisdom from all the people you've spoken to. But the two extra things that I'm definitely going to start doing based on the book that I hadn't already mapped out were the checklist. I've actually read Atul Gawande's checklist manifesto as well. I really like that book, but I never considered it with
it's a great book.
How it relates to chess. So yeah, I'm going to grab the examples you used of like looking at what your opponent's idea is, their checks, captures and threats, and then what's changed in the last move, and then your checks, captures and threats, if I can say that. And then lastly, I've been working on tactics really hard for the last week or so, and I had been thinking in terms of pattern recognition, focusing on that, and also then like the slower calculation. But I think obviously that's the bone of contention in the tactics section in the first four tenets, but later on in the book when you talk about tactics redux, I think I'm probably going to focus on themed puzzles using CTR 4.0, but not focus too much on like just blitzing out like woodpecker style, getting to the point where I just have all these patterns memorized, more like improving my calculation, taking the time I need to take, and then drilling it with doing more random puzzles, probably using like chess tempo, for example. So yeah, those are the two things that I most like. Okay, this has actually like fundamentally changed how I'm thinking about the structure of my training. So thanks very much for that. I really appreciate you writing the book, because it's helped a lot clarify some of the thoughts I was having.
That's great to hear, and obviously I approve of these changes, being the one that wrote the suggestion. And and I don't know if Dojo has this, and I mean I'm always like, you know, I'm always preaching the same sort of a handful of resources, especially like for players around your level. But I mean, the two biggest ones, as I say in the book, are step two, thinking ahead. But the other one is the Checkmate Patterns Manual, which you can get in book or on Chessable.
Chess Dojo does something similar. They recommend the Mate in Twos and the Mate in Threes from the Polgar 5,334.
Yeah, I mean, I like that book. I mean, that's one where I would I might have to call up Jesse Cry and, you know, do an argument, do a 10-minute argument video with him. Like it, but I actually like the pattern permutations of the Checkmate Patterns Manual in particular. Like, to just see it from every angle systematically, I feel like is important at your level. But that's just my two cents. And as I've said, it's every chess player has an opinion, you know? So at some point you've just got to do the work.
Yeah, that's it. I think one of the things that the Chess Dojo, one of the reasons why they created it is because they recognize that there are so many voices and there is so much advice. Mm-hmm. And look, this may not be, you may argue with me, you know, Ben Johnson may come on the podcast and have an argument with me about Polgar's mates, but like, yeah, the nuts and bolts might change, the details, but to have a structure and have a plan just given to you is so valuable, because you don't have to sort of too much about it. If you recognize that, okay, this is going to be good, the nuance might improve it slightly, but I don't need to actually go in search of all these other things. I can just do this program, which has been created and curated by these people, these experts. And then, I'm probably going to be good to go.
Yeah, quantity is the best quality, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I've got a couple of questions about your chess then. So you said that in the book, as of writing this, in May 2023, I'm planning to return to active competition as soon as I finish writing a book. So I was wondering, now that you've written it, is this still your plan? Actually, sorry, that wasn't in your book, of course. That was on your website.
No, I think whatever, I've said it somewhere. I have, and I've mentioned this in a couple interviews. I actually, like, right around the time I was putting the finishing touches on the book, I did find a local league to play in, which it was there all along. I just didn't realize it was close enough where where I could go. So I've been playing in a almost weekly league. And honestly, it's the only thing keeping my chess game afloat right now, because I haven't, in the past few days, I've started to wake up, you know, excited to play Blitz and stuff, which I hadn't felt for a while, and working on a little bit of openings. But prior to that, I was in a bit of a lull where I was going and playing every week, but kind of going through the motions when I reviewed the games and not feeling very inspired. But I feel like I'm starting to get my mojo back a little bit. And I'm probably going to stick with just the league games at least through January. But after that, might start looking for to supplement it with a few tournaments, which if I did that, that's a lot. As we wrap up, Ben asks me about my own approach to OTB, what weaknesses I am working on, and how. That discussion continues right after the break. And we are back.
How are you finding the games? Have you found success, or have you been happy
good.
With the games?
Yeah, I've gotten a little lucky results-wise lately, which, you know, doesn't always happen. It's kind of nice when it does. Nice. Yeah, I'd give them a B. I feel like I'm not in tip-top form, but it makes a huge difference just to show up and play. It stops bad habits from getting too far out of control. So it could be better. Very nice. It could be worse. I'm definitely not, like, there are moments where you feel like as we were talking about with the reading, there are moments where you feel like you're immersed in, you know, it's like you're in a foreign country and you're starting to learn to think in the language. You know, there are moments where you're at that level with your chess. You just feel like it's a part of your daily consciousness. And I'm definitely not there right now, but I'm also like, it's like I'm having to use the language once a day or something. It's like enough to keep the ball rolling, at least.
Yeah,
it's
kind
of where I am.
Nice. Okay. And maybe it's not happened then yet, because if you've been in a lull, you might not have been training all that much. But I wondered how writing the book has actually changed your own training, because this is always interesting. You've just written a book about how to improve as a chess player. And like, it's obviously part of your, this is, you know, you are the host of this podcast and you do so many episodes on improving. But now that you've actually published it and you had to structure those thoughts and put them all down on paper, I just want to know how your training has or will change.
Yeah, well, it's really a case of practice what I preach, because, you know, one of the sort of main takeaways I hope from the book is to ultimately, at the end of the day, it's really hard to decide what to study, but I gravitate towards things that I enjoy. So I do enjoy competing, which is good, because I do consider, as I write in the book, I consider that the best practice. So I do want to compete frequently. I do enjoy working on my openings. I do enjoy playing Blitz. So basically my study plan is structured around those things. And I recognize that those aren't, if I were truly trying to optimize in my chess results, there would be some hard calculation work in there. And I'm basically at this point in my life, I'm just not going to do it. You know, this is what it is. That there might be some other period in my life where I decide I'm going to spend an hour a day, but it's not happening imminently.
Yeah. And it might actually be better for your chess career not to do that, because you might, if you force yourself to do it, you might stop enjoying chess just enough that you stop playing altogether or stop going to tournament games or whatever. Like, it's easy to make that hobby into something you don't enjoy anymore.
Yeah, it's a good point. And as I write in the book, when you're playing regularly, you are getting calculation practice. Like, could I do more? Yes, but it's not nothing.
It's like,
you know,
playing basically gives you everything, because apart from reading, you can't replicate reading a book through playing, because you're not grabbing out someone else, you know, taking lessons from someone else's mind, but you are doing tactics training, because you can check for tactics every move and see if you can make a tactic work, or you're doing calculation training or visualization training. Like, it has everything in it, basically. Last question then. In chapter 12, you mentioned an example of three of your shortcomings. So you said converting advantages, time trouble, and calculation. And I just wonder, obviously, we just mentioned calculation, you're not focusing on that, but I wondered which of those you're going to focus on and how you maybe decided, like, how do you even decide which weakness to focus on?
Yeah, time trouble for me is the one that I'm really focusing on, because when you're playing regularly, you do get a regular chance to address it. And that is the area where I have been making progress. And as I've said before, at least at my level, like, so much of so much of results comes down to decision making and sort of managing game flow. So for me, like, that's the lowest hanging fruit, even not to say it's easy. Behavior change is one of the hardest things, but it's easier to me than just becoming like immensely stronger at calculating. So I would say that of those three things, that's the one that I'm working on. And I am seeing slow progress with setbacks along the way, such as my most recent game. But overall, the advantage conversion is frustrating. I played a couple blitz games yesterday and it's still terrible. And it's funny because that's relatively low hanging fruit. Also, you know, like if every time you screw up a winning position, you play the same position against an engine, like even if we're just talking about blitz, like I feel like I would get better at it, but you just want to play the game and you want to go to the next one. So that's absolutely. One where it's not out of the realm of possibility that I would get more motivated. It is an issue in OTB, but it's a bigger issue in Blitz for me.
Time trouble?
No, advantage conversion.
Advantage conversion. Okay, yeah. I was going
to
say,
when I have more time, I tend to not screw it up as often, you know?
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it kind of makes sense to struggle with that in Blitz. But yeah. Okay. Nice. Fantastic.
Well, Ben, I mean, in closing, I really admire, like I said at the beginning, I admire that you're doing this. I had a friend when I was in probably around age 30 who decided he was gonna have a party, and everyone who came suggested a country for him to go live in for 6 months. And they put it in a hat and he picked it out and he ended up going to live in Zambia for 6 months. And, I think he enjoyed the experience and it's something he would have never done. So I'm all for, like, as you mentioned, feeling professionally unsatisfied. I'm all for sort of obviously really pushing hard until you find that thing. So I just think it's awesome what you're doing and don't let the haters get you down.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me as well, because it makes a big difference. And yeah, it's good. It's just good to hear your thoughts. And yeah, definitely keep throwing at me unsolicited advice, you and listeners
as well.
Yeah. So,
we forgot to mention, by the way.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, we forgot to mention that you're collaborating with I Am Andres Toth and Eric Rosen. You should probably give a plug to whatever it is you're doing with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to work with Andres Toth on general chess. We haven't decided exactly how that's going to look yet. And then I'm going to be working with Eric Rosen mainly on openings. And yeah, so I'm very lucky to be able to work with those two, both obviously extremely strong chess players, but also experienced educators with a wealth of stuff on their respective YouTube channels. So yeah. And stuff I've enjoyed previously. So it's I'm particularly lucky to be able to like speak to those people who I've already seen them and admired them from afar.
Yeah, obviously great content creators and great guys, as evidenced, you know, Eric, if he's charging for lessons, they're not cheap. You know, you can't afford them on a shoestring budget. So it's pretty cool that that he's helping you out. And Ben, you and I should stay in touch as well. We could potentially either do like check-ins on the podcast, or I'm happy to collaborate on your channel at some point as well. So
that'd be fantastic.
But yeah, excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, so am I. Thanks so much for having me. It's been loads of fun chatting. Yeah, looking forward to having another conversation.
We'll link to your YouTube channel. Is there anything else people should need to track your escapades?
No, it's Piffle Sticks on YouTube, which is just a nonsense word I made up combining the word piffle and fiddlesticks. So PIFFLESTICKS. That's the only place I'm actually doing posting stuff at the moment. So yeah, follow me there.
Okay, great. Well, look forward to it, and good luck, and enjoy it.
Thank you so much. All right, chat soon.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.